This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. An earthquake of magnitude 5.5 struck off the coast of Turkey's Mediterranean province of Antalya Saturday, the Kandili Observatory said. The earthquake occurred at a depth of just over 93 kilometers, it said, after revising the magnitude up from 5.4. Turkish media said the earthquake was felt in Antalya and neighboring provinces. There were no immediate reports of casualties or damages to buildings. Thousands of protesters rallied in the Armenian capital on Saturday in a renewed call for the prime minister to resign over a controversial peace agreement with Azerbaijan. Armenia's prime minister announced the Moscow-brokered agreement on November 9th, ending 6 weeks of war over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh that left thousands dead. Under the deal, Armenia agreed to cede three districts to Baku and, in addition, four others. Azerbaijani forces had won back during the fighting that had been controlled by Armenian separatists since the 1990s. These decisions sparked fury in Armenia, where demonstrators stormed and ransacked government buildings and have since staged near daily demonstrations in Yerevan, demanding that their leader step down. Saturday saw the biggest rally yet, with some 10,000 protesters gathering in Yerevan's Liberty Square, according to AFP journalists who were there. The prime minister has said the peace deal was Armenia's only option and that it ensured Karabakh's survival. Argentina's Senate has passed a tax on about 12,000 of the country's richest people to pay for coronavirus measures, including medical supplies and relief for the poor and small businesses. The government hopes to raise $3.75 billion with the tax. This is VOA News. Tens of thousands of royalists gathered in Bangkok Saturday to show their devotion to the Thai monarchy on the birthday of the current king's late father. This comes amid months of street protests led by a youth movement demanding reform to royal powers. The current king led a candle lighting ceremony in front of the Grand Palace in Bangkok to pay tribute to his late father, who died in 2016 after reigning for seven decades, during which he was seen by many as a symbol of national unity. In recent months, though, the monarchy in Thailand has become a target for a youth-led protest movement that accuses the current king and the government, led by a former army chief Prayuth Chan-o-cha, of expanding royal powers to a level not seen since the absolute monarchy ended in 1932. The protesters broke long-standing taboos by openly criticizing the king for taking direct control of two military units and the wealth of the Crown Property Bureau, valued in the tens of billions of dollars. Saturday's ceremony, though, was one of the biggest shows of royalist support since protests surged in July. Oman plans to amend labor laws, introduce new taxation, and end some long-standing subsidies while ensuring that low-income families are protected, the Gulf Arab state's foreign minister said on Saturday. The minister told the IISS Manama Dialogue Summit in Bahrain that significant changes to labor policy would include abolishing a requirement that expatriate workers need permission to transfer to a new employer. That's one example. Low oil prices and the economic slowdown caused by the new coronavirus outbreak are straining the finances of Oman, a relatively small energy producer with debt rated junk by all major rating agencies. Oman's new ruler has shaken up the government and state entities in an attempt to show investors he's open to reforms. Kuwaitis voted in legislative polls on Saturday, with the Gulf state mired in its worst economic crisis in decades, which poses a challenge for the government's relationship with a parliament blamed for blocking reforms. More than 300 candidates, including 29 women, are vying for 50 seats in the Gulf's oldest and most outspoken assembly with legislative powers. Critics say it has stalled investment and economic and fiscal reform in the cradle-to-grave welfare state. For more on these stories and others which are making international news headlines, we invite you to visit our website at voanews.com. Via remote, Laurel Bowman, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
My drive is based on my desire to see strong, credible institutions, you know, and institutions that are founded on sound governance principles. And in our case, an institution that is founded on sound governance principles, but sound electoral processes.
The chairperson of the Ghanaian Electoral Commission commits to administering credible elections on Monday.
We are God-fearing people, and it is up to us to keep the faith and keep calm and allow the agencies and then the Electoral Commission mandated to do this job, to do their task. And I think after that, we would have no fear but a free and fair election. Yes, that should be the expectation, really.
The Gamanche, the overlord of the Gas State, is calling on Ghanaians to ensure peace during the election process.
To order without causing any violence, because in any way, violence will not bring out any results. And that we continue to go ahead to the program, the schedule of the election, because I think that is what will matter to bring out the desired results.
And the Interreligious Council of Uganda considers a new date for a presidential debate ahead of next year's general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The chairperson of the Electoral Commission of Ghana says her organization is fully prepared to administer free, transparent, and credible elections on Monday. Attorney Jean Adukwe Mensen's remarks follow a meeting with both local and international poll observers at the headquarters of the Electoral Commission in the capital, Accra, Friday. Mrs. Mensah updated the poll observers about the progress so far made in the run-up to the presidential and legislative elections scheduled for Monday. I sat down with Attorney Jean Mensah, chairperson of the Electoral Commission. In part one of the interview, Mrs. Mensah says the commission is fully prepared for the vote.
I must say that we are fully prepared. And I say so because we've put in place an effective planning and distribution mechanism. And so some 1 month into the election, we had disseminated all the necessary materials into the field and conducted training for over 240,000 field officials who would be manning and conducting this election. Additionally, you know, for the first time in our history, ballot papers were printed and distributed to the various police armories some 2.5 weeks before the election. From where I sit as chairperson of the commission, I say that we are fully prepared. Our officials have been adequately trained, and we have a sufficient supply of materials in the field in readiness for the election come the 7th of December 2020.
So talk to me about the new measures your administration has implemented to ensure the polls are credible and transparent.
What we've done is to strengthen and deepen our processes. And so from the word go, we recognize that elections are a process. It's not just an activity for on 1 or 2 days. And therefore, right from the word go, we took steps to demystify our processes and remove the cloaks of secrecy that had shrouded our work. And we did this by, you know, setting up a platform that we called the Let the Citizen Know platform and providing them with regular, relevant and timely updates on our work.
You recently compiled a voter list or register to be used for these elections. There were a whole lot of noise made, but you were able to do it. Tell us what you put in place to ensure that you met that commitment to have a credible register to be used for the elections.
Yes, interestingly, you know, the commission deployed a completely new biometric verification management solution ahead of this election. And by that I mean right from the building of a new data center and a disaster recovery center to procuring biometric registration kits and biometric verification devices and the software were all done this year. Of course, these processes started last year, but because of the COVID-19 virus, we had some challenges in implementing very early on. And therefore, we initiated the process of compiling a brand new register ahead of the 2020 election in July. But I think it was just a lot of the determination of our teams, the training afforded to them, and the message coming from the commission, one of a message of professionalism and efficiency, is what trickled down to all our staff members, and they worked to satisfaction.
Can you assure Ghanaians that the elections will meet their high expectations of transparency?
Definitely. And I think we've been transparent and very bare with our processes all along. And the good news is that our electoral process on election day is very transparent. It's an open and transparent process, and it can be observed by all. Today, we have some 28 international and local observer groups who are observing, you know, the elections. We've also provided accreditation to over 10,000 media personnel, and free of charge. For the first time in our history, we are providing the media with accreditation cards to be able to observe and monitor the elections at no cost. And, you know, our processes are open. They are, as I mentioned, they are done in open spaces, and so citizens can observe it. The counting is also done in the open, and you hear, you know, those who are counting, they separate and sort out, you know, the ballots for the various candidates, and you hear, if they mention the candidate, you can hear one, two, and so it's very open.
Madam Chairperson, before coming to speak with you, I spoke with some officials who work here, not the top officials, and this is what I came up with. I'm going to read it to you. They said, describing you as a transformational leader who has brought so many reforms into the electoral process, right, from having a clean, credible register, this is what they said, their words, not mine. Despite the stiff opposition you met, my question to you, Madam Chairperson, is what drives you to take such bold steps or initiative?
Well, I'm driven to see things done properly, and I believe that the register, the voters' register, is the bedrock and the foundation for free, fair, credible elections. And if you have the foundation document, the source document wrong, then you cannot have credible and clean elections. And therefore, my drive is based on my desire to see strong, credible institutions, you know, and institutions that are founded on sound governance principles. And in our case, an institution that is founded on sound governance principles, but sound electoral processes.
Attorney Jean Adukwe Mensah is the chairperson for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. She spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Meanwhile, the Ghanaian Police Service has deployed officers across the country for the elections. They will be supported by other security agencies, including the army. It forms part of the effort, officials say, to maintain law and order, prevent intimidation, and to ensure the public feels safe to vote. This following a recent survey that showed that prospective voters would like to have an armed police officer at the polling stations. This as Ghanaians cast their votes to choose a new president and parliament Monday. Sheila Kesi Abeyir Bachman is the spokesperson for the Ghanaian police. She tells me that they have implemented new measures to keep the peace and to ensure the safety of voters.
Sufficient preparations have been made. You know, we plan to deploy over 62,000 security personnel. And that means that it's not just the police service, but police officers and officers from other security agencies. I mean, the Ghana Immigration Service is one. The Ghana Fire Service is one. The Ghana Prison Service is one. Customs Division of the Ghana Revenue Authority. And we will also be supported by the Ghana Armed Forces. All these officers have been deployed. And particularly on election day, you see us in our numbers providing security before, during, and after 7th December.
So talk to me about this. Some surveys that were done showed that some prospective voters will feel more comfortable if there is an armed security officer at the polling station when they go to the polls, because they expressed concern about some vigilante groups or individuals who might try to cause trouble and all that. How are the police planning to assure Ghanaians about protection, about security during the elections?
So we are aware of this survey, but the good news is that we are on the ground. There is a police station at every corner in this country, and that is why the district election security task force work has been very good. We engage with the community. In fact, what we do is community policing. So we know what the various communities expect and need. And so the plan generally is that the officer at the polling station will not be armed. But we have three more tiers of officers who will be armed because we are deploying four tier of officers for the election, and particularly on election day, the period for collation, the period before declaration, and during the declaration and jubilation.
Okay, talk to me about public engagement in circumstances where a prospective voter, a voter in queue would say, okay, I suspect this person trying to create confusion or trying to undermine the integrity of the election. When they approach the police, or if they don't, they express concern. Have you trained the police officers to handle such situations?
Of course we have. You know, the good thing for us this year is that we had to undertake some kind of humanitarian policing during the COVID lockdown in some areas of the country. And that gave us a lot of experience and exposure on how to handle these matters. Because, you know, COVID is a public health matter. So we didn't have to approach it the usual police manner, which meant that we needed to speak to people to wear their masks, to stay home, to wash their hands, to keep social distancing. That has been very useful for election as well. So our officers on the ground, be it a police officer, be it any officer from the institution spoken about, have been sufficiently trained and psyched to engage civilians in a manner that civilians will feel confident and comfortable.
Last but certainly not the least, what is the message of the Ghanaian police to everybody?
Great. Our message is that we are deeply committed to ensuring peace. We are deeply committed to prevent crimes from happening. But when they do, we are also very ready to arrest the perpetrators, to go through the consequence of the law. So Ghanaians should feel very confident in the police. They do not have to go to the polls and be wondering or be concerned about their security. That is why the Election Security Task Force was formed, not only with the police service, but we needed the numbers and the resources of other security agencies for this work. Ghana will be peaceful. Just do your bit. On election day, you wear your mask, you wear clothing that has no party colors, you go to the polls, you go to the polling station, make sure you stand in the queue with some amount of distance, you follow the protocols. After voting, you go home. You can monitor all media houses for updates. During collation and counting time, you can go back to the polling station, just help in the counting and collation, and then Ghana will be peaceful. We are there for you. We will give the necessary protection.
Sheila Kesi Abeyi Bachman is the spokesperson for the Ghanaian police. She spoke with me from the capital, Accra. The Gamanche, the overlord of the Ghana state, is calling on Ghanaians to ensure peace during the election process. King Ni Takite Kochuru II also called on the officials of the Electoral Commission and security agencies to carry out their respective duties with impartiality. His remarks come after leaders of the political parties and their representatives, including presidential candidates, paid a courtesy call on him in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. I sat down with the Ga King and began by asking him his message to the candidate and to the Ghanaian people in the run-up to the polls.
Being Ghanaian is advanced citizenship. You have to want it, because what plays an integral part of who we are as Ghanaians is our culture, our norm, and its unique stage. A tradition so diverse, and yet it brings you out as a man in spite of chaos, your calm. And that's what we expect to happen. True leadership is being able to accommodate an opponent, an advocate, speaking on top of his voice, things that you will take 3 years to say in 3 minutes, and yet you say, this is my brother, we are competing. That's all that it is. It never goes beyond the line of that.
Recently, there was a by-election in Ayawaso, West Wagon, part of the place that you rule over. People are expressing concern that there could be a repeat as the overlord of the Ga state. What do you tell those who have something to do with this in order to ensure that your state remains peaceful?
I think to the candidates, especially the parliamentary candidates, it's incumbent on them to advise their supporters to keep calm. I think after they vote, they should leave the rest of the job to the Electoral Commission and the security agencies. The security agencies, I think, is also the onus is on them to keep the peace and make sure that people behave in proper conduct. And then to the Electoral Commission, we want a peaceful election.
Your Majesty, you know, during election time, there are rumors, there are suspicions. The umpire usually gets the blame for being biased towards one against the other. People express skepticism and sometimes suspicions.
What is important is us. I think that it's important that we realize that it is not an individual interest. It's a corporate goal that we as Ghanaians go through before, during, and after these elections very peacefully. And that should be the mark and prime beyond everything else.
What should be the expectations of Ghanaians as they go to the poll to choose, A, their president, or two, to choose their representatives by way of lawmakers to help in building the country up?
What should be their expectations?
Yes.
I think they should expect nothing but how Ghana has always run its elections. By all means, there will be a few flashes here and there because, like you say, there will be suspicion, there will be mistrust, people will be skeptical about the number of issues. But all in all, I think that we are God-fearing people and it is up to us to keep the faith and keep calm and allow the agencies and then the Electoral Commission mandated to do this job, to do their task. And I think after that, we would have no fear but a free and fair election. Yes, that should be the expectation.
Kini Takiteko Churu II is the Gamanche, the overlord of the Gas State. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Meanwhile, Ghanaians go to the polls December 7. Taking an active part in the elections is the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, or CODEO, which will be deploying poll monitors. Representatives of the group say it seeks to enhance citizen engagement in all phases of the electoral process. Ghanaians will choose a new president and parliament in elections on Monday. Incumbent President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo is expected to face a stiff challenge from former President John Dramani Mahama in the presidential poll. To learn more about plans to monitor the elections, I sat down with Albert Kofi Ahing, the National Coordinator for the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, or CODEO.
In fact, what we normally do in the long-term observation then is to find out what the stakeholders are doing, the major stakeholders, in the electoral process. So we are on the field. We started the long-term observation around September, and then we put there to find out, like I already said, how the EC is preparing, how the parties are faring by way of campaigning, and how the skilled agents are also doing, you know, whatever they are supposed to be doing.
So, have these long-term observers pretty much given you a preliminary report, an overview of what they've seen so far, and so that could influence the next strategy for the short-term observer in terms
of... They've been sending monthly reports.
Okay.
They send monthly reports about what they have seen. If there's any violence going on in the consensus, they report. If there's any activity by the EC, they will report. If there are activities by the CSOs or the NGOs, they will report. In fact, what they have been bringing us so far has been that there hasn't been much activity by way of the political parties. For example, they have reported that it's only the NPP there and the NDC that are seen. The others are virtually negligible. You don't see whatever they are doing. They're also saying that compared to the last election where you had the CSOs and the NGOs busily engaged in promoting peace, sending peace messages, this time around, because of COVID, all of them, almost all of them, didn't have any funding. Mm.
What is the relationship between CODEO and the Electoral Commission, the only body constitutionally mandated to organize elections in this country? What's the relationship in terms of what you find, what you tell them, and how they can improve upon their organization of these elections?
We have always told the EC that our role is complementary. We are in to promote peace, to make sure there's peaceful elections, there's fairness in elections. So the EC knows about it. And so we go to the field to make sure that the level, you know, the fairness level, what you call the level playing field,
right,
So ours is there to make sure that, one, the EC is doing the right things according to law. You know, they work according to rules and regulations.
Right.
So CODIO is there to make sure that these things are well implemented, especially, for example, on the day of the election. We watch out for all these things.
Before we leave, Mr. Ayin, what is your message? What is CODIO's message to, one, the people of Ghana, two, the security agencies that will be working on the day of the election, essential services, including the media people, and the Electoral Commission, about how they comport themselves during the election process?
I'll start with the police, the security, that they should make sure that they maintain peace. They don't look over their shoulder when they are supposed to be taking decisions. You see, they should do things with military dispatch and precision. If somebody has misbehaved at a police station, he should be apprehended and the right thing done. You see, if you look back at the some time ago, we had some by-election at
Ayawaso.
What happened there was, it was an ISO. We don't want anything like that to happen. People were in uniform and they were going around with masks. And it's like the police themselves didn't know where they were coming from. That was the impression at least that was created. And I don't think Ghanaians would want to have a repeat of that thing again. And then again, we would want the political parties to behave well. There are rules governing elections. So if you go to a polling station and there's a problem, leave it to the rules of the game. It will be resolved by itself. Sometimes even the presiding officer can resolve the issue.
Albert Kofi Ahing is the National Coordinator for the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, or CODIO. He spoke with me from Accra. The UN Conference on Trade and Development report, the COVID-19 pandemic has had a devastating impact on most of the world's 47 least developed countries, whose economies have slumped to the lowest level in 30 years. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
In this year's Least Developed Countries report, UNCTAD economists warn the current grim situation will not improve unless the world's poorest countries drastically boost their productive capacities. They report average income is likely to fail in at least 43 of the 47 LDCs, pushing 32 million people into extreme poverty. Director of UNCTAD's Division for Africa and LDCs, Paul Akiwumi, says LDCs need to focus on their productive capacity to diversify their economies so they can deal with the challenges of climate change, recession, and now COVID. He says LDCs must build up their productive human, natural, and capital resources and entrepreneurship to provide goods and services. This, he says, will enable them to grow and develop their economies.
Now, it is quite clear that LDCs, being commodity-driven, need to move forward in their development paradigm. And we've seen through the COVID crisis that because they're commodity-driven, they've been able, and all the lockdown that has happened, they've been able to export less, and their revenues are down, the tax collection is down, and their economies have suffered considerably.
Akiwumi cites lagging international support as another problem. Because funding is down, he says LDCs have little money for social development and are unable to service their foreign debt. The report finds 8 LDCs, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Ethiopia, Laos, Myanmar, Nepal, and Rwanda, have modernized and transformed their productive capacities into better performing economic structures. It says Asian LDCs have increased their manufacturing capacity, which now accounts for 19% of their gross domestic product and 12% employment. The same cannot be said for African LDCs and Haiti. The report says manufacturing in those countries remains stagnant and accounts for only 9% GDP and just 5% employment. UNCTAD is calling on the international community to invest, finance, and support LDCs in their efforts to transform and rebuild their economies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Ghana. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Interreligious Council of Uganda plans to reschedule a debate for presidential candidates before next year's elections. This after scrapping plans for the debate over financial and logistical challenges. Many Ugandans say a presidential debate will help prospective voters to determine the candidate with the best policies to vote for during the elections. For more about the plans to reschedule the presidential debate, I read Sheikh Waisiwa Mohammed Ali, an executive member of the Interreligious Council of Uganda.
The Interreligious Council of Uganda has postponed the proposed presidential debate to a date yet to be established.
So what caused the postponement of this debate?
Because of the schedules of the candidates, and therefore the Interreligious Council received some communication from the Electoral Commission that date be determined later.
There were concerns of logistical and other arrangements that could also complicate the organization of this debate. Is this accurate?
Exactly. When I heard the Archbishop Kazimba announcing it, he indicated that also the finances could be one of the reasons that the debate will not be able to take place as per proposed date earlier.
So how confident are you that the council members and the council as a whole will be able to find enough resources to organize this debate?
Indeed, the council is still struggling to do that.
What are the expectations of the Interreligious Council that all these political or the presidential candidates will participate in the debate if indeed you are able to find the resources? Are you confident that all the presidential candidates will participate in the debate if it's organized?
We are quite sure because we contacted all of them and they were in agreement with it, despite some of the problems that are happening on ground. But they were all in agreement to attend the debate.
So currently, what do you think are the expectations of Uganda with regards to having or organizing this presidential debate, and what they expect to hear from these candidates in order for them to have an informed decision to make their choice of who becomes the next president in next year's general election?
Indeed, the Ugandans had much interest in this debate because according to what is happening on ground, that some of the candidates have not been able to access the audiences wherever they go. So this debate is being taken as a major one by the citizens here, if at all is to be held.
Some opposition parties have expressed concern about their meetings being prevented from being held. Sometimes they clash with the police.
The Interreligious Council had met the Electoral Commission regarding those issues and also met the police at the headquarters of the police and discussed over those concerns that were raised by the opposition.
Will you continue with the engagement because it appears their concerns have not been resolved yet? So will you continue with the engagement?
Yes, we are still continuing and we are yet to meet the parliamentary focus team over the political issues and even some other prominent personalities.
What is the Interreligious Council of Uganda's message to the people of Uganda as they prepare and as they welcome the political party campaigns in the run-up to next year's elections?
Well, our message is that we all respect the instructions given both by the Minister of Health in regards to the COVID challenge and also keep to order without causing any violence, because in any way, violence will not bring out any results, and that we continue to go ahead to the program, the schedule of the election, because I think that is what will matter to bring out the desired result.
Sheikh Waisiwa Mohammed Ali is an executive member of the Interreligious Council of Uganda. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. South South Africa's president has announced new anti-coronavirus measures in a major city as the nation nervously watches an increase in confirmed cases. Cyril Ramaphosa pleaded with South Africans to comply with all restrictions to keep the virus from spreading during the holiday season. VOA's Anita Power reports from Johannesburg.
This has been a tough year for the nation with Africa's highest coronavirus burden, President Cyril Ramaphosa acknowledged. But now, as many South Africans plan to embark on a month-long summer holiday, now is not the time for South Africa to let down its guard, the president warned in a Thursday night speech. This week, President Ramaphosa announced a set of restrictions targeted at the nation's current coronavirus hotspot, Nelson Mandela Bay, also known as Port Elizabeth. He warned that the entire country could be next.
As much as we want to relax, this virus does not relax. And this virus does not take a holiday. This 2020 has been a difficult year for us as a nation and as a country. It has severely tested our resolve and demanded great sacrifices of each and every one of us. But even as the holidays approach, we cannot let our guard down.
Nearly 22,000 South Africans have already died, he noted. Port Elizabeth has recently seen a jump in confirmed cases. The city's 1 million residents must now observe a nighttime curfew and are restricted in both buying and consuming alcohol in public. Gatherings are now limited to 250 people for outdoor events and 100 for indoor events. The president also said that nationwide, post-funeral gatherings are prohibited. Johannesburg, the nation's economic hub, is known for drawing people from around the country. During the end-of-year holidays, the city empties out as many residents return to their families. Security guard Eric Cabello says he plans to return to Carletonville, a small town southwest of Johannesburg, for the season. Cabello, who is 27, says he has no quibble with the restrictions.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Because of alcohol, it gives us a problem. You can see, you can check even a lot of people, they get to accidents. You see, a lot of things are happening. Alcohol, I think the restriction is better.
Office manager Tando Zondi is also hoping to travel this holiday season to her home in the KwaZulu-Natal province. No restrictions have been announced for that area, she said.
His speech yesterday was mostly for PE, and I'm in Gauteng, so I'm not really affected. We're still on level one? Yeah, still on level one, so didn't change anything for us, so I'm not affected. I'm fine.
However, in his half-hour televised family meeting, President Ramaphosa reminded all South Africans they have a role to play in keeping the resurgence contained.
Fellow South Africans, we must change our behavior now to prevent a resurgence of the virus and manage outbreaks wherever they occur. If we think of this pandemic like a bushfire, we need to quickly extinguish the flare-ups, the flames, before they turn into a big wildfire like an inferno.
Serious words as the nation approaches its first break in a difficult year. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Keeps on winning over hate. Love, love still trending. Hashtag is love. Hashtag love, love. Back in our yard,
I see lovers overcome.
Imagine this world when hate has been overrun. Neighbors lending hands across society. Love is bridging gaps. Oh, love keeps trending. No matter what, it just keeps on winning. Over hate, love, love still trending. Hashtag is love. Hashtag love.
white or black. Yo. Love is coming, better check the hour back. Hates desecration. Oh no, 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 no. I see the people all over the world tired of the hate and separation.
We're tired.
And anti-immigration. Yeah. People don't let race nor religion come divide us. I'ma take it again. Don't let race or religion, yo, be used to divide us. See the way that love they trend. Oh, 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 love keeps trending. Yeah. No matter what, it just keeps on winning. Love over hate. Love, love still trending.
somewhere for the weekend. Yeah.
Tazama naiona dunia wangu peke yangu tu. Jua linapozama giza likiingia, natamani nikuone tu. Oh baby, ukisakata rumba sijalewa na yumba, katapila limepomoa nyumba. Natamani nife nizikwe nawe, shida na raha nawe, niwe nawe. Mwenzako nimepata na homa, umepasua ngoma. We baba ni noma, akili imesita imegoma, mwisho wa reli kigoma.
Kia mapenzi acha nilowe, pacha wangu ni wewe, tuna machi sare sare. Nitazurura kure nina penzi kwa numbara chale, tetele nipe mchele soga wake mwewe. Kenya ngoma, mama, ngoma, mama. Akili mesita imegoma, wishi warili kigoma, kigoma, kigoma. Oh, 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 baby.
Nibakishie, usinipe vyote mimi.
Nibakishie,
utaniwa.
Nibakishie,
kwa hiyo roho yangu.
Nibakishie,
oh, baby.
Nibakishie,
usinipe. Yeah.
aikolana muso wami aukolana kilondoloze
music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mpuga, and producer Zaida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, do not allow the belly to make you useless. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Good evening, Africa.